you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello, innovators. Tamara here, your host and experiential risk taker. That's my style of innovation. And it's how I gain the competitive advantage every day. Well, almost every day anyway. So what's your style, you ask? Good question. Let's find out. So go to my website, gotolaunchstreet.com, G-O-T-O, launchstreet.com, all one word, link is in the show notes, and take the free assessment to discover at least a piece of your innovation advantage. How you innovate is how you differentiate, contribute, and add value. It's your mental model, and it's super powerful. And what I think is super cool about that is that no two brains are wired the same. That means your brain, like your thumbprint, is totally unique to you. How cool is that? And speaking of brain, on today's interview, we're going to delve into whole brain leadership with Catherine Lavelle. She is the Managing Director and North America Lead for Talent and Organization at Accenture Strategy. So she helps organizations develop and implement workforce transformation programs to improve employee performance and deliver bottom line results. We have a rich discussion about the new skills required to lead in today's complex and crowded marketplace, things that we don't normally talk about with leadership, things like empathy and intuition. As I said, whole brain leadership. Let's dig in.
Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you, Tamara. I am really excited to be here.
Well, let's start with, since we're getting to know each other, what's your favorite innovative brand or business and why do you love it so much?
This is a fun question. I thought about this. I have to say, I think my favorite is Stitch Fix for a couple of reasons. I mean, personally, I love fashion and I really love that somebody can get exactly what I'm looking for and it's just waiting for me at my doorstep. But what I really love about Stitch Fix is that they're actually really an analytics company disguised as a wardrobe subscription company. You know, they use analytics and deep learning algorithms so they can actually get to know their customer in a very deep way, and they take the customer data and turn it into actionable opportunities. And they've actually found that they can drive adoption of styles of people that people thought they or didn't know they liked. And the algorithms get better over time, so the clothing selections match your style better over time. So I think it's a really great application of modern technology.
So that's really interesting, Catherine, what you just said about not only, and I've actually used Stitch Fix, so I get it. And I'm always shocked when that box shows up. I'm like, how did you know?
Right.
Wow,
right.
It's amazing. I would love that. And it looks good on me, but I would have never tried that in the store. So
yeah,
it's fascinating.
Use it too, and similarly, I've thought some things I wouldn't wear this, and then I put it on and loved it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great example. Thank you for sharing that. So I want to, as we kind of dig into this conversation, I actually want to start by putting some context around our conversation. And you had this great report that I read, and I'd love to kind of hear your perspective on what are the driving forces that are requiring us to change how we think about leadership? Because I think we know that. We hear it all the time, but we don't really understand why sometimes.
Well, sure. You know, and my heart goes out to leadership everywhere because they're dealing with so much. If you think about, you know, new technologies with the pace of technology maturity becoming shorter and shorter every single day, there's new market entrants on a regular basis. There's constantly shifting customer demands. They've got investor pressures, and now they've got really vocal employees who aren't even just vocal inside the four walls of their company. They're vocal on social media and in the public as well. So you've got all these different pressures converging on a leadership team that has probably up till now had pretty traditional ways of managing and thinking about their organization.
So I don't want to be assumptive. So this might sound like a naive question, but help me understand why the old ways of leadership don't work given the new model that you're saying. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think, you know, our cognitive abilities are just not keeping up with the rate of change these days. It's so frustrating. And to your point, there's all these changing demands And I'd never really thought about it that way, of that your employees are not just vocal at the water cooler. That's just to date myself, how old I am. But they're also vocal out in the public too. So why is that in battle with the traditional leadership style?
So let me just build on the point that you made around employees, because that'll answer the question that you just asked.
Yeah.
So in this research that we did around this topic of whole brain leadership, we looked at different populations and we saw a trend of, you know, a group of leaders emerging, both employees and customers. And we're calling this group the Pathfinders. And the Pathfinders feel both empowered and obligated to raise their concerns, issues, preferences, both in the public regarding their consumer brands or whatever they're dealing with in life, but also in their employers. And the interesting thing I think about, well, a couple interesting things about this Pathfinder group. First of all, there's no specific demographics about them. They're almost literally split down the half between female and male. They're not generation specific. They tend to be both customers and employees. So you've got this group of people that are highly powerful, and in addition, as employees, they're twice as likely to be on the fast track to leadership. And as consumers, they're actually in the top 10% of households when it comes to household incomes. And they're over 80% more likely to consume more goods. So this becomes a really powerful group and a really vocal group. And so back to your question, you know, why does it matter and why do leaders need to manage differently? In addition, and as maybe an outcome of all of these different market pressures that they're facing, you now have both employee and customer pressures, where these employees and customers think they can go directly to anybody they want to. And you know, I laugh because I can think of a CEO client I had last year who said, "Catherine, I don't know what to do. The millennials just keep coming at me."
They just keep coming to my office
calendar, and they just schedule time with me. And, you know, I never even had to put a barrier up before, but now everybody just shows up in my office. And, you know, that CEO is just completely overwhelmed in that case with millennials, but similar concept of people feeling very free to reach out to you, whatever your level, whatever your position, and knowing how to deal with that effectively.
So that's fascinating to me, because on one hand, like I look at the old, I don't want to say old, it's really not fair, but the more, let's call it traditional styles of leadership, right, which are a little bit more command and control, a little bit more standoffish. Do you think you have to switch how you do everything, or is it a matter of setting expectations?
Well, I think the good news is we found that it's not an or. It's not moving from the way you used to do things to a new type. And, you know, we use as an analogy the idea of the whole brain and using left brain and right brain skills. And while in the past, you know, senior executives were very well versed and educated and prepared to do things that we think of as left brain thinking, things like critical reasoning and data analysis and making tough decisions, we're now saying, okay, it's time for them to augment that lens and that approach to things with things like creative thinking, intellectual curiosity, empathy, negotiation, intuition, innovation. And so we're asking executives, and really, you know, this research was for these C-suites, but I would say this is going to become true of everybody in most industries. We're asking everybody to think about using the combination of those skill sets to really get through to your audiences.
So talk to me a little bit about this whole brain approach to leadership. So I get what you're saying is kind of those hard and soft skills, kind of using a lot of different skills inside the brain. How would you, if I'm thinking about transitioning my leadership style to be a better leader and in this new age that you were talking about, how would I think about whole brain leadership?
Sure. So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, if you think about those more traditional skills, certainly they're still needed, right? You have to do financial analysis, you have to predict sales and profitability on a regular basis, and you have to interact with investors and analysts if you're a public company. So that's not going away. But then you also probably need to think about being less hierarchical, because that's just kind of the way the world is working today. Flatter organizations where more employees have reach into your organization, but you should also, if you're wanting to think and act and manage differently, you should be bringing different people into your traditionally hierarchical structure. So we would suggest that that's going to require, you know, for you to really understand the concerns and interests of that employee population and customer population, that you need to be able to relate to them on a personal level. And so that's going to require more of that EQ that we talked about, or just demonstrating empathy and self-awareness, or willingness to embrace change because you're doing something differently. So, you know, if you're in C-suite, thinking about whole brain leadership means about thinking about managing all aspects of your business and leveraging all aspects of your talent and capabilities to do just that.
I want to ask you about three in specific that you mentioned kind of just through the last parts of our conversation that I thought were kind of interesting. And one of them I actually didn't expect to hear you say. And that one was negotiation, if I heard you right, that's part of it. How does that fit in?
Well, you know, think about, you know, relationship building. You may have a very short amount of time to go through negotiation, like when you're buying a car, or you may have, you know, years to negotiate things throughout the course of your career. But any successful negotiation requires some level of trust and understanding. And so being able to relate to whoever it is you're negotiating with, understanding what's important to them, what their agendas are, figuring out how do you compromise and what compromises can you make and what are you willing to live with all very quickly while you're going through a transaction absolutely requires those kind of right brain skills. In addition to on, you know, left side, you may be doing some sort of math around whatever level of threshold you're willing to live with.
I just find that so fascinating. I was just thinking back to a time where I was in a conversation with a boss that was trying to get me to do something that I clearly didn't want to do. And she kept throwing out all these variables to try to see which one would stick. And finally, one of them did. And I was like, oh, I'm motivated by that. And I went on my way and I did what I was supposed to do. But I look back and I think about your comment about relationship building and negotiation, how what she really did was figure out what was important to me.
Right.
And at the time, I don't think I realized it. Looking back, I was like, oh, I see what you did there. But it was really important to get me, to help me see how and why I could do this project she wanted me to do.
Right, through your eyes, not her eyes.
Right, exactly. So the other one I wanted to ask you about is empathy, because that is a word that I think is thrown around in leadership a lot today, but not always used accurately and maybe not always taught well. In terms of how do you really build that skill? Because it's like, I feel like some people really have it and some people really have to learn it.
I think that's probably very fair. We've all known empathetic leaders and just empathetic human beings and others who it doesn't come.
Just aren't.
So
not naturally.
But I love what you just said, Tamara, about, you know, the definition of it not always being understood, because I think what we'd want to be clear on is that empathy doesn't mean, you know, becoming a doormat or taking up every tearjerk cause that comes to mind, right? Empathy is being able to relate to another human being or a cause in the interest and really putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And so we're saying that that really is a right brain skill because it requires you to kind of stretch outside the bounds that you might have been used to in terms of what it takes to run your business around all the other areas we talked about, the, you know, fact-based and data and financials and critical reasoning. So being able to do that, I think I think a lot of leaders are realizing the importance of that, but you ask such a critical question, right? Which is, how do I actually build that? And, you know, I'm going to go way back here, but I remember one of the most helpful things to me when I started out in my career was the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yes.
And there were two things I took from that book that just served me well in my career. And I think there's variations of this, so it's not the only way. But I remember, think win-win, and if you ever, when you dove into that, it wasn't a slogan. It was, what does the other party want, and what do you want? How do you both get what you want, or at least the minimum of what you both want? And then seek to be understood, which means put yourself in the other person's shoes and understand where they're coming from, what they're relating to. As you just said, when you were talking about the job with your prior manager, you know, being able to see something through their eyes so you can see what their interests and agendas and needs are. So I think that certainly takes practice. And, you know, we do have some views around what C-suite leaders and senior executives can do to build some of those skills. But I think it's also as easy as kind of going back to basics of human relationships and understanding what does this take to succeed in your communications and relationships with another person if you want to build empathy.
So I think a lot of it, not a lot, sometimes it goes back to active listening too and actually paying attention to what the other person's saying, because then you can gather a lot and really understand where they're coming from versus kind of the waiting to speak I think mindset that a lot of us get into. I want to ask you a question about empathy, because I had this conversation the other week that just happens to tie right into this. It was a colleague of mine who was just hired as the CEO of another company. And he said to me, you know, Tamara, I really want to listen to people. He said, but I'm starting to feel like everyone expects their ideas to be the one I go forward with. And everyone, you know, I have so much empathy that at this point I'm inundated with other people's perspective versus doing my job and kind of, you know, being the captain of the ship. And I know there's a balance, but just given this whole brain leadership you're talking about, I'd love to hear your perspective on how you maintain empathy. Cause I do agree. It's so important to understand other people's perspectives and be in their shoes, but also keep the filters you need to keep to do your job, whatever level you're in, really.
Precisely. And, you know, Tamara, when we were just a few minutes ago, I was saying, it's not about giving everybody what they want or being the doormat or, you know, just rolling over, but it is about relating to and understanding people's needs and desires. And, you know, I can fully relate. I see very senior executives every day that have to, as you said, steer the ship and make the right decisions for their company. And, you know, they gather a lot of data and input from different sources. And so while you may get input from somebody who thinks their view is the most important and they need their requests met, you may get the same thing from a diametrically opposed view on the other side. So that's where I say, you know, that's why we say whole brain leadership. And so being empathetic and taking in all the views and understanding people's needs and how they relate, I think, you know, being heard. I was in a meeting today where someone said, well, and they want to feel like they've been heard. And the next person spoke up and said, no, I want to be heard. I don't want to just feel like I've been heard. I want to be heard. And a C-suite member was in this meeting and they said, and what if you're heard, but I don't make the decision you like? And the person said, I can respect that if I know I was heard. And I thought that said it so well and really summed it up. If people really understand that you have heard them and paid attention to them, I find personally in my professional work and I'd say in my personal life that there people are more forgiving and more likely to accept the decisions that were made if they felt they had a voice, even if it's not the answer they wanted.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. So I just finished writing my book on innovation, and one of the sections and comments I put in there is exactly what you just said, that it's people don't need to be right, they need to be heard. But I think I said heard, I can't remember if I said heard or valued, but the point being that I think a lot of that is about communication and letting people know why you did or didn't go with their idea or how it fit into the bigger picture, what their contributions were and weren't.
And, you know, at the same time, that person who has to make the decision is applying critical reasoning and they're thinking about the results and their, you know, their quantitative thresholds, whatever those are. So they're really having to work both sides of their brain to do exactly what you just mentioned.
I want to dig into innovation, but before I get there, in your research, were there any of the skills that surprised you?
You know, the one that was interesting to me that came out was intuition. Oh. And when we looked at, because I don't know that I would have thought of intuition as a skill, and I'm not, I can think of how you build empathy and innovation. I don't really know how to teach the intuition part, but it is coming out as a key and critical skill, and one where, when we look at where there's gaps between what senior executives say they've got, it's the biggest gap. So they say they rely the least on intuition, and yet we're saying, but it's one of the critical factors going forward that senior executives need to pay attention to. Now, intuition is probably formed over time and shaped by experience as well. So again, drawing on all the other skills they've got, but that one was of particular interest to me.
So I want to ask you a couple more questions about that. I'm sitting here a little bit like open jaw, because I was thinking, oh, intuition, part of me really, and is that just trusting your gut? Part of me really wants to say, I totally drive on intuition. But part of me thinks that sometimes I start with intuition and then back myself out of it.
So I think, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how it's defined here, but what I think I see most or frequently is when you have intuition to try something, to take a risk, to take a chance, that tends to fuel executives pretty well. I think sometimes in perhaps the desire to be empathetic or collaborative, that they don't listen to that nagging voice that says something's not going to work. Like more often than not, I feel like, and in my own personal and professional life, I feel like, you know what, I knew it and I let something go on and my intuition told me it wasn't going to work and I should have paid attention to my intuition. So I think I don't know this for sure, and our study didn't delve to this level, but I wouldn't be surprised if the intuition that where there's a gap is listening to that, you know,
right,
sense you've got that's telling you you really should or shouldn't do something, and not being driven 100% by the data or the persuasive idea.
So let's talk about innovation. In whole brain leadership, how is that defined?
I'm so glad you asked, because this is one of the greatest parts of whole brain leadership is that, you know, innovation, you know, and I don't think we defined it specifically, but innovation is just as much as coming up with a new incremental idea as it is, you know, a big, bold, market-leading idea. And the idea that lots of little innovations lead to big innovation is important.
Yeah.
And if you have that, you know, if you're honing that skill set on the right brain that we're talking about, you're a lot more likely to pay attention to and actually take a risk and try some of these innovative ideas or techniques that you might have.
Well, I really appreciate what you just said, because so in our work in innovation, what we've seen is that it really is about thinking differently about what's right in front of you. That's kind of the definition we crafted around it because of what you just said. Sometimes it's a tiny shift in how you do your work that leads to a big process improvement. And other times it's some game-changing, disruptive new technology. Like it can be all over the spectrum, but all of them matter and everybody's included in that. In that type of skill, how do you, from your perspective, drive more of it as part of the whole brain leadership?
Yeah, so this was an interesting part of the research as well, and I'll give you my perspective, but just this, the research itself said, we found that 65% of the C-suites that we talked to, interviewed, said that they need to be working on this. So the idea of creating right brain skills is really important. And so to answer your question, like how you begin to drive this so you can have innovation, yeah, I'd say a couple of things. And one of the things that, you know, I've seen in action many times is the use of design thinking approaches and co-collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I've done this a lot with senior executive groups. And it's always shocking to me how totally surprised they are that they're being asked to do an exercise or get up and write future headlines or move through flip charts. They're used to being presented to, a recommendation made, and then they decide. And so asking them to begin to use different parts of their brain and designing, you know, ideas or parts of solutions is something we do a lot in our consulting approach. And most senior executives that go through it find it to be completely novel and at the end, completely rewarding, and they, you know, building new skill sets. So I mean, there's a couple other ways, but I think, co-creation and design thinking exercises are some of the very best things you can do to build innovation skills.
Yeah, those are great. And what I really love about those sessions when we do them, and you probably experienced it too, is the very beginning, there's a lot of crossed arms. And I would say there's, you have to tell people, hey, this is going to feel uncomfortable, and that's okay. Because that really is a part of the process as you start to think differently. And I think what's interesting about the brain is the way our creative minds work is it's actually loose connections across our entire brain. So you're using all these different parts of your brain to tap that different thinking, to your point earlier. And sometimes there are these like little ahas, and sometimes there are these big ahas, but darn, does it feel uncomfortable to start with when you're not used to it.
That's a good point. And Tamara, I love your phrase, you know, there's loose connections across our entire brain. Because I think that's exactly right. In this whole brain thinking, you're drawing on all parts of your brain and your various skill sets. But, you know, that type of active exercise, I'll call it, for people to go through, I think really forces you to do just that.
Yeah, and that's why I love your concept of whole brain leadership versus kind of here's a specific lane, a style of approach. It's kind of using everything, which leads me to my next question. So if you're like me, I'm a Gen Xer, just to call it. So I was raised in the time of hard skills, and this is how leadership works, and here are the rules of leadership. And this is much, and not only is it more modern, and I'd say adaptive to the times that we're in, but it can also feel a little bit softer. So if we're raised as a hard skill person, how do we think about reskilling ourselves? Is that even a word, reskilling? I'm not sure, but you know what I mean.
It is. These things are just reskilling and upskilling. So yes, absolutely.
Perfect.
There's millions of us, right, that are in that generation and have taught to appreciate hard skills. So I think that, you know, just even being open to new ideas, and, you know, it's tough to succeed in just about any industry if you don't do that today.
Yeah.
But also opening yourself up to trying new and different things. I think the spirit of intellectual curiosity carries people a long way, right? The people, and the, frankly, CEOs that I see that are very successful are amazingly curious. They are voracious readers. They are consuming podcasts, videos, journals, magazines, books, nonfiction books, fiction books, as fast as they can. And I'm always amazed at how well-versed they are. And when I go through a, you know, a specific example or a case study or what another client's doing, they have not one, not two, but like 40 questions on how that worked and what did they do. And, you know, and so I kind of aspire to be like them, right? I think if I can make myself that curious about whatever it takes to be successful, I'll be in good shape, right? So even a dose of intellectual curiosity, I think, can carry you a long way.
Isn't that true? And it really shows that you're also open to new perspectives and new thinking. I think it's when we get locked in one lane and one style of thinking that we start to fall behind in changing times. And I want to ask you a question about whole brain leadership and how it drives culture, and specifically a culture where innovation thrives across the organization. Because as you pointed out with those pressures earlier with the changing customer demands and, you know, employees with voices and fast pace of change, I think what I'm also seeing, and I'm sure you are, is that companies have a mandate to innovate across all the teams, right? It's no longer just the people in the corner with a cool office. So how does whole brain leadership help make that happen?
Well, I think, honestly, I think whole brain leadership has been served really well by the new prevalence of the concept of agility and agile methods. So, you know, those of us who live in just the traditional business world have seen agile move expand from just IT to marketing and legal and risk and other areas as well. And that has really paved the way for this whole brain leadership because, you know, as you think about taking minimal risks and being creative or trying something, you know, the concept of minimum viable product, which is very much an agile concept, comes into play here, right? How do we experiment? How do we try something without it being perfect? Because, you know, as we've heard, I really believe in the phrase that perfect is the enemy of progress. I think that those concepts can actually serve us pretty well. And then the culture begins to permeate, you know, that we're, it's okay to try different things. And what the term failing forward or failing fast is not necessarily a bad thing when it's within some appropriate and risk managed borders. So I think the culture of agile paves the way quite well for the culture of whole brain leadership.
I wonder if, also, whole brain leadership, where you're tapping more of that negotiation, that empathy, that intuition, kind of all the things you've been talking about, helps you deal with failure. I hope that makes sense, what I just said.
It makes total sense. And I think, you know, we talk a lot, I mean, everybody talks about resilience, and the people that are most resilient, or if you look at some of the most successful entrepreneurs in the world, they fail many times, right? I'm always seeing the quote on how many bankruptcies so-and-so went through before they really struck it big. So I think people who get used to failures, and, you know, I don't even like calling them failures, right? Experiences where they didn't get what they want or didn't have the predictable outcome that they wanted in life. Those are learning events and really do help you down the road. And I think those whole brain, I think you're right. The whole brain skills help you deal with all of those things and help you get through them as well.
In your work, what do you think stops people from, or individuals or teams, from innovating?
Oh, I think way too often, you know, we use the term analysis paralysis, but it's that it's that aspiration for perfection, right? Not releasing something, not calling something done until it's 100% good and you know everybody will vote yes. That's number one. And I'd say closely behind that is this decision-making where everybody has to say yes to move something forward. I don't think consensus decision-making is very ideal or profitable idea, and yet one person can shut something down. I see that time and time again, and I think it's really dangerous in companies. Because if you take the time, like, to actually exercise this whole brain leadership, our research actually showed that those companies are up to 34% more profitable over a 3-year period. And so, it, you know, the incentive should be there for companies to want to take a little bit of risk in working differently and thinking differently.
Yeah, what's interesting, I think, about what you're saying with the decision making about everybody saying yes is the other side effect of that is it really waters down any idea, like in a bad way, to the point where whatever you put out there is, as my grandmother used to say, it's neither milk nor meat. It's just this thing that goes out into the marketplace because everybody had something to say on it. And I'm wondering where that comes from. Do you think that comes from just a risk of failure, a risk of a fear of you know, getting it wrong? So you try to get everybody's opinion first. In your work with your clients, where does that, and that need for perfection, where does that manifest from?
Well, if I go back, you know, 10 to 15 years, I remember the whole, the push, you know, Alfred Deming and the whole push towards Six Sigma and, you know, pushing out any kind of error and perfection and in the quest for perfection. And don't get me wrong, like when we're talking about safety belts and airbags that saves people's lives, absolutely, they need to be, you know, as close to perfection as possible. But I think, and I remember when that trend spread as well into all areas of business, and it kind of forced out creative thinking and risk and innovation and new ideas. So I don't want to blame it all on that. But I think, you know, that kind of set the stage for the next generation of business leaders and how they would operate and what kind of decisions they would make and what was be required. And so I think over time, this consensus, need for consensus also crept in. I also think companies are looking to build change acceptance and, you know, manage their change journeys. And so what better way than to get people to feel like they're part of the process, yet part of the process turned into being a decision maker, and suddenly you have 1,000 decision makers on one topic.
Right. On one small topic half the time, too. That's the worst part. It's not even something significant. You know, you have this great advantage of working with a whole range of clients in different industries. I'm curious, what has them pick up the phone and call you? What's keeping them up at night? And particularly that whole brain leadership and this type of kind of thinking about how you approach the culture and the team really benefits.
Yeah, I'd say the number one call or request that I get from senior execs is, do I have the right team in place to guide the ship and lead it where we need to in the future? And some of these things we just talked about, right? Like you'll say, I love the leaders that I work with and the people who run my business, but are we well poised? Do we know how to make the right kind of decisions? Do we know how to deal with market disruption? And can we do it at the pace that's needed given how fast our, you know, the startups are moving in our industry? So that's probably number one. And then the next second question, and the reason clients will call, is that next generation of leaders and the next level down, which is, how do I have the right talent I need given, usually it has to do with technology, given the pace of technological change in our industry, jobs are going to change dramatically over the next 2 to 3 years. Yeah. How do I know what I'll need, and how do we prepare and skill our people to make sure they're prepared for that change?
So I don't know if this stat is 100% right, but I read the other day that it was for 6 out of 10 jobs, technology can now do 30% of it. And that number is growing.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. We do some work to look and see which jobs are going to be the most automatable. Yeah. And, you know, there's some in the finance area that are going to be up to 70 to 80% automated.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, it's interesting. It's you're right. And it's definitely industry or category specific. And I'll tell you, I had a conversation with a gentleman at an accounting management conference I was keynoting. And it was one of the board members from the association. He said to me, you know, Tamara, the thing that nobody's really talking about, that we're afraid to talk about, is the fact that in 5 years, there won't even be an accounting degree in college. We don't need it. Computers can do what we used to study for 4 years to do. And I probably said something like, well, what are we doing here? Let's go get coffee. Like, why are we here? And but he said something really, he said something really interesting back to me. He said, you know, Tamar, here's the thing. That leads to great opportunity for us. It means that we can be more strategic and add real value and not just be number crunchers. We just have to think differently about what that means for our jobs and where we add value. And it was such an eye-opener to me to realize that shift in technology can be a huge opportunity, while scary, actually leads to like some incredible human opportunity to live up to potential.
Right. No, I think that's a fascinating view. I agree.
Okay, before I ask you my last questions, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Sure. So Accenture.com/wholebrainleadership is where they can get more information. And you can find me on Twitter at KDLavelle1, the number one.
Excellent. So the other question I wanted to ask you, I just want to make sure we got that in there in time. The other question I wanted to ask you about is, you know, when you look at your clients and the ones that have embraced whole brain leadership, I know you talked about that 34% more profitable. What are some other transformations you've seen them have as leaders and as companies?
Sure. So I think there's what we found in the research and the study, which was an increase in revenue growth. So it was, I think, over 20% in revenue growth and 34% in profitability. And then there's my own personal experience. And honestly, while those results are tremendous and really important, the part that I really value and that I can see companies start to value is a greater greater appreciation for each other, for the roles that they each contribute in helping make decisions, because you're not relying just on yourself. You're bringing others into the way you make decisions. And often for senior executive levels, that's bringing in more junior people to help work on topics or inform you on topics and decisions that need to be made. And so I see greater pipeline and development of succession planning and leadership development, and also more effective workings of the C-suite and senior leadership groups themselves.
I have to imagine too, going back to what you were talking earlier about the Pathfinders group, both as customers and employees, which is super fascinating, that it probably helps you leverage that kind of that fast-paced group as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing my work for me. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring that up, or if you didn't bring that up. Absolutely, right? These are a huge, powerful group to be leveraged. Yeah. And ignored, they can be quite damaging, but addressed and embraced and worked, these groups can be incredibly powerful, an extension of your brand.
Well, it's interesting. I think in the old days, it was all about the early adopters. Right? Those were the people, as you know, that tried something. They were the first ones to try something. So if you had a new idea or a new way of thinking, they were the ones you wanted on board because they were your advocates. But what I'm hearing you say is these are people that are not only maybe early adopters, but they're really more invested in the outcomes too. To your point, they are empowered, but I think you also said obligated too, right?
They really believe they've got a social obligation on behalf of the greater good, whoever they believe that is, to raise their voice and their viewpoints. So yes.
I love it. And those are some of those are the millennials that keep going into the office of the, client you were talking about. It'd be a good thing. I wanted to actually, but before we kind of close out, I wanted to ask you about the lack of hierarchy and how that's affecting leadership. You mentioned it briefly in the beginning, but I think it's an important point because I think whether you're a small business or a Fortune 100, you are dealing with this new matrix that's kind of never been seen. And part of that, I think, is the Pathfinders you were just talking about driving that. But how does that impact us?
So I think that picture is still emerging. Some startups and I'd say some high-tech industries are known for having very unhierarchical structures. And we've read about some that just threw away the org chart, right? Everybody does whatever work needs to be done. Right. I see traditionally a Fortune 100, 200 companies a long way from that. So they still need to keep their roles and accountabilities and levels of authority, but there's absolutely no reason they cannot do the things we just talked about with embracing different, probably more junior levels below them and bringing them up and understanding what drives them and what their concerns and interests are and getting their viewpoints on potential solutions and innovations as well. So I think I am seeing greater cross communication and working across levels without a strong sense of hierarchy as they work, but I still see those organization structures existing.
It's fascinating to see how that'll impact as we go forward. To your point, I think a lot of that lack of hierarchy has been siloed to certain industries and certain geographies, really.
Yes.
And sizes, and it's starting to seep into everything else that we do. I mean, I see it in my own life and work all over the place. And it's really interesting. So Kevin, this has been phenomenal. What's your final piece of advice for everyday innovators on Launch Street looking to be a bit more whole-brained in their approach?
Well, we talked about it and touched on it for a little bit, but I would just say be curious. Be curious about everything. I last night was watching something and it was I think a fashion designer who based an entire collection on a collection of bridges that she saw while she was on vacation. And I thought, okay, how'd you get to that? But something made her look at that, at the first bridge, whatever it was, and say, how could I turn that into fashion? And I can only imagine the curious questions that followed on. So if you're curious about learning everything that's of interest to you and relevant to your career, I think, the world's your oyster and it will take you very far.
Well, I think to your point, you have to have your antennas up and constantly be looking, because I think if you're waiting for something obvious to hit you over the head, it's a little bit too late. It's right. those ahas or those connections are in those things like a bridge to fashion, which is not something I would ever look at, but being open enough to see that and to see that there's something there to pay attention to.
I would agree.
Catherine, thank you so much. This has been absolutely phenomenal. I just made a note to go look at the Pathfinders in my work.
Great.
Yeah, and make sure I'm leveraging them, and to make sure I want to go back to the whole list of whole brain and make sure I'm tapping all of it, because I think I'm strong in some and maybe weak in some others.
Well, great. Tamara, I'm so glad it's been helpful. And thank you so much for the opportunity to talk.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.